This is Mark Kestisher, voice of the NBA, MLB, and NFL on ESPN Radio. If it's Bay Area action you seek, we're talking about it. From the South Bay to the North Bay and everywhere in between, we got you covered. Now get ready for Bay Area Sports Wrap with Lowell Tuckerman, Marco Ukalovich, and Ryan Leon.
Fake toss, two fake tosses, and then to Kittle over the middle. Touchdown, San Francisco. He faked it to McCloud, he faked it to McCaffrey, and then hits Kittle over the middle. Tell me this guy doesn't look like he's in his seventh year in the league.
It was actually perfect. I got to see the tape, but the way it sounded, I heard like a radio call of it. You know, it's a fake left, it's a fake right. All the backers vacate the middle, and I just kind of block, and I go. We ran against the Rams in 2018, and I fake cut block on the front side, then I got up and ran. That one didn't score, so we stayed up this time, and it worked out a lot better.
Wow, that was quite a weekend of football. Welcome to Bay Area Sports Wrap. Along with Ryan Leong, I am Marco Ukalovich, and we're recapping week 15 of the NFL. And what a weekend it was. All the upsets that you can think of happened, along with Dallas losing to Jacksonville. You had Detroit upsetting New York. But Ryan, I want to get started with the Thursday night game where the San Francisco 49ers went up to Lumen Field, a hostile territory in front of that 12th man, and they just took care of business, winning 21-13 over the Seattle Seahawks, clinching the NFC West, the first time they've done that in a few years. And now they are riding on all cylinders. And it's good to know that this team, who's now won seven games in a row, is hitting their stride at the right time.
Absolutely, Marco. I mean, the only unfortunate thing is that they didn't have Debo Samuel, who hopefully he's going to be back, I believe, what, by the playoffs, hopefully, is the idea?
They said 2 to 3 weeks, but again, Shanahan was like, you know, preparing, didn't give a timeline, but basically said he will be back by the end in the regular season. So if we're going off just on what he just said earlier, then yes, that's about a 2 to 3 week injury. So we'll find out more.
Yeah, no, they're definitely doing well, though. I mean, Brock Purdy's been amazing. I mean, the Brock Party, right? Everybody's calling him that, or
yes,
some other nicknames that we can't mention on family radio. But he's done a great job. I mean, this guy being the last pick of the NFL draft has been amazing. I mean, he's had another game where he was 17 of 26, 217 yards, two touchdowns, no picks, 117 rating. Awesome. Christian McCaffrey, I mean, he's proven that, you know, he's playing as great as he ever did when he was at Stanford, and I guess that's what he was with Carolina. He was, you know, when he first started out, 108 yards rushing on 26 carries, also had 30 yards receiving. And George Kittle finally broke out, and you know, we've been talking, Marco, about how he's been spending time in the locker room talking to the media. That's not a good thing, because usually if you're doing well, you go to the podium. Kittle had four catches out of five targets. He had 93 yards receiving and both touchdowns. In fact, we played one in the open of the Al Michaels call. That was just great. I mean, that was an awesome call to see how, I guess, what Purdy faked to his left, faked to his right, threw down the middle. Kittle was wide open for the touchdown. I mean, it was just a fun play to watch.
Yeah, and it's good to see George Kittle finally getting more involved in this offense. When you think of the guys who've gone down in the offensive side of the ball, whether it's, you know, Trey Lance, Jimmy Garoppolo, Eliza Mitchell, you know, Debo Samuel now, George Kittle has definitely got to be more involved. And I like this four receptions for 93 yards and his two touchdowns. The guy is a beast. He does more than just run block. And I like that Kyle Shanahan is using him more in this offense. And look, Brock Purdy, this kid's legend is just growing with each game.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned his stats, but the fact that he's just so calm and so poised when he's behind the center, and even when, you know, the offensive the protection, the line protection breaks down and it collapses to where he has to use his legs to get out of there, he still does not panic under that pressure. And it's good to see that this kid out of Iowa State is able to perform like this after only two starts.
Well, I thought, and I could even mention it, on the very first time that we saw him play, and I was telling this to like CBS Sports Radio when I do those in-game updates, I said, I'm no football expert, but this guy seems to roll to his right and throw while he's on the run. And the fact that he's doing that as a rookie is amazing to me. Because Jimmy Garoppolo can't do that.
No, you can't.
And he's a veteran player.
Right.
And Garoppolo might have a stronger arm, because Garoppolo does have a good throwing arm with a quick release. But he kind of reminds me of Kaepernick, though. Sometimes he puts too much mustard on the ball and you can't catch it.
Yeah, exactly. And again, when the pressure the pockets collapsed on him and the pressure's gotten to Jimmy Garoppolo, what has he done? He's either taken a sack or he's made an errant throw. Brock Purdy has not done that yet, and I know it's only two games, so I'm not trying to, you know, get the Brock Purdy bandwagon going, but it's hard to not like this kid for what he's done. And going forward, I think with him under center, the Giants have a chance to make a deep playoff run here.
I totally agree, yeah.
And when you look at the reason why this team's on a 7-game winning streak, their defense has just been so lights out. It's no wonder why they're the number one defense in the league, led by Fred Warner, led by Dre Greenlaw, who to me has been their best defensive player in this last month. He's the most underrated linebacker, I think, in all of the NFL. And when you add in guys like, you know, Taluna Hufanga, who's been playing great at the safety position for them, making key plays, this defense is just so great that, heck, I haven't even mentioned Nick Bosa yet.
Yeah, who had another sack. I think you just like saying Hufanga's name. That's why. I think that's what it is. Let's be honest here. Come on, perfect name for radio. I'm enjoying covering these guys. I mean, they've really been amazing. That defense. How many times have they allowed even more than 20 points? Have they even done that much?
I think maybe twice this year.
Yeah, and the thing is, of course, when they had that streak going until the last game that we saw them against Tampa Bay, the Dolphins, they haven't even allowed any second half points.
That's right.
In fact, they went the whole month of November not giving up any points in the second half.
That's right. And then that included the shutout against the New Orleans Saints at Levi's Stadium. And this, again, when you have that front four, and really, really the front seven is amazing. But then, you know, you got the secondary, which, maybe a year or 2 years ago, you could say they were the weak spot of this team. Now they're playing very well as well. And you got both Wards, Javarius and Jimmy, playing really well. And again, Hufanga, this guy's becoming my favorite player. And such a great, just humble guy. We've talked to him a couple times in the locker room. Just the most nicest human being you could probably ever meet.
Yeah.
He's always crediting his other teammates for his success, and that's awesome. Out of just a second year player, as long as he's been playing, so
yeah. And I've been covering the Niners since the late '90s, and this team is definitely one that's more special than some of the others. I really think they're playing really for one another, and I think of course you don't want to say this because you don't like seeing guys get hurt, but the injuries have actually brought them closer together. I think
I have to agree with that. When you look at what way this team and all the injuries they've suffered, you would think that at some point it would be detrimental to them, that they would just all of a sudden have a letdown, because emotionally, how can you not when you see your star players go down like that? And they have not had one letdown so far. Again, 7 in a row. Going into this game against the Washington Commanders, I just think that this team is really starting to hit its stride, especially at the time of the year when it really counts.
Yeah, couldn't agree more, Marco.
Mac Hollins out on defense. He's all the way back. Stevenson.
Is anyone going to
tackle? That's on the 30. Flips it back. Stanford band nowhere in sight.
Uh-oh.
It's picked off.
Uh-oh. Oh, no.
Unbelievable.
Oh, wow.
Incredible. Chandler Jones takes it in and wins the game for the Raiders.
That was Kenny Albert on the call on Fox, and I'll tell you, wow, what a great play, Marco, to watch the Raiders. I mean, you and I weren't around for the Heidi game, but that's our Heidi game, watching that play right there and watching Chandler Jones just stiff-arm Mac Jones. That was hilarious. I mean, that's got to be, for Raider fans, you know, we didn't even get a chance to talk about how much we hated the Patriots because of the tuck rule. Yeah, well, tuck this, Bill Belichick.
I agree. That was the Heidi game. The Holy Roller, the Sea of Hands, that was basically all of those combined into one, that final play of the game. And you just have to, you know, I think everyone echoed this. What the hell were they thinking doing those laterals when It's the last play of regulation. You're going to go to overtime. You might get the coin flip and win. Why do that and give the other team a gift, a walk-off? And, and maybe they just want to play Santa Claus, but you wouldn't have known that by the look on Bill Belichick's face at the end of that game.
Yeah, I mean, I had to cover that game remotely for AP Radio, and I had a chance to listen to Ramondre Stevenson, and he took blame for that play because it's true. Even though he didn't cause that fumbled lateral, he did actually he made the first lateral. So he laterals the ball to Jacoby Myers, who gets the ball and is like, well, what the heck do I do with this thing? And, well, I guess I have to get rid of it because we have to score on this play, not realizing. You know, they must have gone to the Donovan McNabb School of Football. Realizing that the game's going to go to overtime. You don't need to win it on the last play of the game.
Yeah, it really is mind-boggling that, you know, you have a team like that, a Bill Belichick team that's, you know, known for discipline, and they just give it away at the end like that. Hey, look, the Raiders needed this win big time, considering the embarrassment that they had down in SoFi Stadium a week and a half before that against the L.A. Rams, letting a 48-hour Baker Mayfield come back and beat them in the final 3 minutes.
Yep.
This was a win that they definitely needed. Now, you know, it showed a lot of poise from the Raiders that, you know, yes, they gave up another 17-3 lead to the Patriots, letting them score 21 points in a row in that second half. But Derek Carr leads a drive down the field, and he's able to, you know, make a great play, find Keenan Cole in the end zone, which that was controversy as well. But when you think of all the stuff that has gone against the Raiders over here, especially against this Patriot team, I think they were owed one, Ryan.
I'll tell you a great story. I work a day job, and so I'm going to my day job, and there was this one lady talking to a couple of her coworkers about this Raiders play. And this guy's a Niners fan, so he hadn't seen the play yet. And I walked back and had to get something from my car, and they're still talking about this play, sort of. And I said, well, you've seen the play, right? And the guy says, no. I'm like, no offense to your coworker here, but you can't describe this play. You have to see this play. So I show the guy the play on my phone, and he just couldn't believe it. It was just great. I mean, it's so similar to watching the Immaculate Reception. It's just so much fun to watch. I mean, I just love the fact that you know, you and I were able to watch it at your house before coming to the Sharks game on Sunday night. I mean, it's just a great play. I mean, something that I think Raider fans are going to remember for a long time, and it's going to definitely go down as one of the greatest plays in franchise history.
Oh, definitely. When you look at the way this game ended and just the history of the Raiders and all the crazy games that they've been a part of since their inception in 1960, this is, you know, by far in doubt the greatest, craziest ending that they could have had to win a game.
And I think just for good measure, we're going to play the later the Dolphins call when the Dolphins beat the Patriots on those series of laterals, the Kenyon Drake play.
Tannehill will throw it, and this will end it after the shovel, or will it? Miami running around, circling. Oh, look out! Gronkowski didn't have the angle. Touchdown! Oh, Kenyon Drake!
And it's funny that this has happened to them twice now.
Could have happened to a better team.
And I couldn't agree with you more. So, again, wasn't the best Raiders game, but, you know, Carr was efficient, 20-38, 231 for three touchdowns. Had that pick six, but, you know, still, Josh Jacobs been great, 93 yards, and they were just efficient offensively.
One more thing about the guys I was talking about that watching that play. We both agreed, too. When you watch the Niners play football, they either win or they lose in a certain way. Throw the book out when you're talking about the Raiders. See, that's what makes being a Raider fan fun and agonizing all at the same time. Because they don't just win games or lose games. I mean, look at the way they lost against the Rams, right? And then they come back and they win this game. I mean, that's why all three of us, you, me, and Lowell, we bleed silver and black. You know, it's still to this day, I'm so upset that they're not in Oakland anymore. Because we had so much fun going to those games.
Oh, definitely.
I mean, it's funny how we didn't get parking from the PR staff, but it actually served as a benefit in a way, because even though I was upset I didn't have parking, the fact that all three of us would park our cars at the BART station and take one or two train stops to the Coliseum, that was part of the experience.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, then we'd have a chance to, like, bond with Raider fans, get to the Coliseum, go to some tailgates, maybe meet the Raiderettes. You know, it was a lot of fun. I mean, I really miss it now. And the thing I regret in a way is I didn't get a chance to really kind of soak it in more, a little bit more. I mean, when I started covering the Raiders in the late 90s, back then the Raiders were still a pretty good team, and their fan base was kind of decidedly renegade, and understandably so. Because of all their struggles, though, they became almost more like a Chicago Cubs kind of fan base.
Yes. I could totally, you know, agree with everything you just said, because when you went to a Raiders game, it wasn't just going to a sporting event. It was an experience. It was a different experience every single time. And I remember when I had season tickets from 2003 to 2005, I had the silver and black pimp hat, and I would get so much love just walking through the parking lot, going into my seat, and which was above right a row right above the black hole. So, you know, that it was, again, there was nothing like a Raiders game. And especially when they were in Oakland, it was just such a magical event. Whether they got blown out that game or not, it just, or whether they won, it didn't matter. It was just the whole experience from start to finish.
Anytime, too, that you wear Raider memorabilia, Raider gear. I used to live in Alameda. I think I had this Raiders canvas jacket. Not the starter jackets I have, which, of course, as you guys know, I have plenty. Instant bonding. You bond with Raider fans instantly. Yes. You don't get that with too many other teams.
That's okay? True.
And again, no knock on, like, the Warriors, who have a good fan base. And, of course, the A's have been in Oakland for a long time. The Raiders really, they really were the heart and soul of Oakland.
I mean,
and it's just a travesty now that the game's now in Vegas. I talked to a friend of mine, Ted Anthony, who used to do traffic on KCBS. And, you know, he was just talking about how that game on Sunday, he's watching it through television. And he says, there's no atmosphere in there. And I said, no. And we could attest to this because the time we went there and we met with, who was the guy that wears the sombrero?
Senor Raider.
Yeah, Senor Raider. Remember that? Poor guy sitting there, he just minding his own business. And this is an hour before kickoff. The guy should be out in the parking lot tailgating.
Right.
But because they don't have that kind of atmosphere in Vegas, guy's sitting on his hands.
Yeah.
And he didn't look like he was having fun.
It was a shame that a lot of people didn't even know who he was, you know. And so I look at it that, you're right. The Vegas atmosphere will never, ever compare to the Oakland atmosphere because, again, it was just the way where that stadium was, the fan base that was there. And it was, like I said, it was an event every single time, an experience that you always will remember. So hopefully, you know, the Raiders can finish up strong here. They got 3 games left. There's still only 2 games out of a final playoff spot. There's still a sliver of hope with this team to hopefully make it. They're going to need some help. Miami's right now 8-6 along with the Chargers. But the good news is the Raiders have the tiebreaker against the Chargers, against the Patriots, and against the Jets. So they can get some help from the Miami Dolphins, and the Raiders can win out. We'll see what happens. Anything can happen. This is the NFL, right? So, I mean, look at the Jaguars and the Lions have a chance to make the playoffs. What does that tell you, right? So that said, I'm looking forward to this weekend's matchups. Raiders going to the Steelers. The 50th anniversary of the Immaculate Reception. Does it get any better than that? It's going to be a primetime game.
I've been to Pittsburgh to see our good friend Sean McCullough. I visited Pittsburgh back in 2015. There's a statue of Franco Harris in the airport, by the way. So I went with another friend of Sean's. His name's Chris Paul, covers the Pittsburgh teams. So they have a an area where the Immaculate Reception took place because the old Three River Stadium is now just part of the parking lot. Okay.
Right.
So there's like a footprint there. I stood on that footprint. You know what I did? I gave a thumbs down. And I'm a Raider fan, so you know he didn't. He thought that was kind of amusing that I did that. But,
nice.
Yeah.
Well, again, all this tradition between these two teams, it should be an exciting. It's a primetime matchup at 5:15 NFL Network, and then the 49ers are going to take on the Washington Commanders. 1:05 start at Levi's Stadium, and again, Christmas Eve. Doesn't get any better than this when you got this time of the year and these games going on. So I'm looking forward to it, Ryan. All right. Well, we'll be back next week with more where we recap week 16 of the NFL. For Lowell Tuckerman, Ryan Leong, I'm Mark Yudkowsky. Thanks for listening to Bay Area Sports Wrap.
Last chance for the Steelers. Bradshaw trying to get away. And his pass is broken up by Tatum. Tipped off.